afternoon. Call the House Committee on Sustainability and Economic Development to order. Three bills on our agenda today. We're going to take them a little bit out of order. For anyone who's interested, start with House Bill 3644, then House Bill 3605, and then House Bill 3633. So start by opening a public hearing on House Bill 3644. Beth, would you like to give us a summary? And Representative Smith, you want to join us today? I assume you wanted to also bring Rob Koshry with you. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly. And we have somebody on the phone.
Mr. Chair, with leave and at the advice and consent of Beth, I was going to give just a quick introduction to the first four people, step aside, let them talk, and then I can come up after to answer questions if the committee has.
Okay.
If that's okay.
That's great. Let's hear a quick summary and then.
Great. For the record, my name is Jefferson Smith. I represent District 47 in the Oregon House. We are here on House Bill 3364, excuse me, if I get my numbers wrong.
3644, right?
3644. They're all good ones.
Yes.
I'm in favor of most of them. The a bill with regard to second stage business development. I want to introduce you to four people doing important work to promote homegrown economic growth with the small businesses that drive that growth, spurring job creation, the single most pressing issue our legislature and our state faces today, and learning how we can get the most out of our economic development dollar, and that we get outcomes from that, that we continue to develop the continuum of business services, and as I mentioned, get real outcomes of this work, as I know, for instance, Representative Thatcher has been working on to get in government services generally. The four people. First, Chris Gibbons, who is the Director of Business and Industry Affairs in Littleton, Colorado, who joins us by phone, has pioneered the Stage 2 fast-growth economic development techniques known as economic gardening to distinguish them from economic hunting and other strategies that are also valuable. Second, Rob Poacher, Economic Development Program Manager for the City of Beaverton, who has adapted the Littleton model to grow Beaverton's local businesses. Third, Valerie Plummer, Executive Director of the Oregon Micro Enterprise Network, who works with small businesses and economic development associations across the state. And fourth, Mike Lanoff, Director of the Oregon Small Business Development Center Network, who has two decades of experience supporting small businesses within the SBDC system. After you have a chance to hear from them, I'll offer whatever input might still be valuable, talk about some potential amendments, and happy to answer questions then.
Thank you, Representative Smith. So should we move to Chris Gibbons, who we have on the phone?
That'd be great.
Very good. Mr. Gibbons, and if you could start by identifying yourself, we'd be glad to hear from you.
Yes, this is Chris Gibbons. Let me just do a quality check. Can everyone hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Real good. Chair Reed, members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to address the committee. I know I've just got a few minutes. I'd like to talk for just a little bit about why we started economic gardening here in Littleton and what it is and then the results that we got. And I'd like to comment that even though this term has become popular over the last several years, I've been doing this for 22 years here in Littleton, so I spent most of my adult life developing this program. The history behind it is it came about when Littleton was in a severe recession in 1987, and our major employer at that time was Lockheed Martin. They laid off nearly 7,000 people. And that city council decided that it didn't want to be dependent on out-of-state employers. And so it gave staff a really simple direction. They said, work with local companies and create good jobs. And that's the only direction we ever got. So the original idea we started with is that we could grow our economy internally, grow your own, if you will. And over the years, as we got a lot of experience with this, we came to realize that it's the stage two companies which have 10 to 100 employees and $1 to $50 million in sales that are really important to the economy. They're typically about maybe 7 to 10% of all the businesses, and they often will create maybe 35 to 40% of the total jobs. So let me just go to the bottom line on our program. After 23 years of running this, we've been through three recessions. The job base in Littleton has grown from 15,000 to over 30,000 jobs. Sales tax, and I understand Oregon doesn't have a sales tax, but it's our primary source of income. Our sales tax base grew from 6 million to 21 million. So jobs doubled, sales tax tripled, and our population grew about 23% during that time, and we had three recessions. So we've had maybe 700 some communities inquire about economic gardening, both the state of Wyoming and the state of Florida currently run EG programs. Washington's got sort of a modified program. If you would go on to Google today and just put that term in quotes, you'd get probably 90,000 hits. It's a pretty good list of everyone around the country that's running an EG program. And I think if I were to offer any advice, it would be about the fidelity of the program. We're not a standard business assistance program. Our tools and our concepts are different, and they are really critical to our success. So if I were to do like maybe three or four quick bullet points, I would suggest focus on those stage two growth companies, focus on companies that have a core strategy built on innovation and not commodity companies that have to compete on price, because when you compete on price, you constantly have to drive down your expenses, and that just leads to a lower standard of living. And then I would suggest using the high-end corporate sophisticated tools and concepts that we use in our program. You've got several good people there, pretty familiar with economic gardening, people that we've talked to and advised over the years. I think Rob Poacher's going to talk in Beaverton. David Bean has been working with the Portland Regional Partners Group. And I know you have a number of people to hear from today, so I'm going to close my remarks with this. Should you pass the bill and establish an economic gardening program, I'm happy to share our experiences and insight in detail with any of your staff folks from the state of Oregon.
Thank you very much, Mr. Gibbons. We appreciate your sense of perspective and history. I'm going to ask if the committee has any questions for you before we go on to some other folks. It doesn't appear that there are any at the moment, but I understand you're interested in staying on the line and listening. If you're willing, it might generate some other questions for you.
Sure. Sounds fine.
Thank you very much. So next on the list, Rob Poetry. And maybe while you're coming up, we should ask if Valerie Plummer and Michael Lanoff want to join you, just so we can maximize our efficiency.
Good afternoon, Chairman Reed, members of the committee. My name is Rob Poetry. I am the Economic Development Program Manager for the City of Beaverton. I have been doing economic development work in Southern Oregon and Washington for since about 1990. So kind of getting long in the tooth doing this. About 8 years ago, I had the pleasure to sit in a workshop that was done by Chris Gibbons, and that was one of my initial exposures to the concept of economic gardening. As Chris said, this is a very innovative type program. It tends to be very proactive. It is the exact opposite of what most economic development programs do as regard to business attraction or hunting versus the actual growing of the existing businesses in the community. Business retention and expansion has been one of the statistical areas where most job growth has occurred, and you heard Chris talk to that. Economic gardening strongly focuses on being proactive and taking action to help the local entrepreneurs that have growth strategies in place to become more successful. It does utilize some very high-powered data resources. This is the data that tends to make a business more competitive with regard to market analysis, identification of potential new customers, competitor analysis, demographics, and what have you. This is some very high-powered intelligence that is usually available to larger companies and not the smaller companies we have in most of our local communities. The program is designed not necessarily to assist startup businesses, and it typically does not provide services to rescue businesses that are in trouble. The key is a second stage business that has been in business for 3 to 5 years, and as Chris stated, has that 10 to 50 employees and $1 to $10 million worth of sales. Economic gardening in Beaverton was implemented in August of 2007 with very, very close partnerships with our Chamber of Commerce and lots of input from the Small Business Development Centers and SCORE. Our program is closely modeled to the Littleton, Colorado program, and we use many of the same data resources that Chris has implemented and used over a number of years. We also see this as the foundation for a very solid business attraction program because of the impact that this kind of information and this kind of support for existing businesses can do a very solid job of explaining to businesses that are looking to relocate that something special is going on in the neighborhood. So we look for that as we begin to develop our business attraction programs as one of the key incentives that our community can offer that currently is not available in any other community in the state of Oregon. While economic gardening techniques vary from place to place, in Beaverton, our program is geared to help business operators get more information about the health of their businesses, doing practical market research and analysis, developing effective marketing strategies, undertaking business financial planning targeted at growth, doing business more effectively on the internet, and building and using customer databases to help grow their businesses. We also offer, with partnership again with the Chamber of Commerce and some of the other agencies, business programs to help educate our community's businesses. We kind of call them a series of business growth workshops. To date, we have actually sat down face-to-face with over 238 businesses in Beaverton. Of that, about 167 businesses have actually listened to our program story of what we can help them with, and about 90 have actually received services, of which that 90 also includes four city departments that have come to us for statistical research. 42% of the businesses we have worked with have become repeat customers. And actually, last Friday, I had the president of the first company we actually worked with come into my office and say, you know, we've been with you for about three different times now. We need to have you come back and help us again. And by the way, help us locate about a 40,000 square foot building because we've outgrown the space that we're in. So we are getting that kind of results. Of the companies we've talked to, about 24 of them we've actually referred to other agencies, and that would be primarily the Small Business Development Center and SCORE. I wasn't able to bring one of our clients with me today to talk to you a little bit about that, but I can share with you some of the feedback that we've gotten from our annual surveys. One quote reads as follows: "It's a brilliant idea, and Beaverton is ahead of the game by supporting their local businesses with this creative program." And I think one that I shared with this committee the last time I was here is still one of my favorites, that economic gardening provided actual contacts. Economic gardening is a superior product. It has a superior price, free, and I hope my competitors are not using it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Bomer, I think we'll save questions for the whole panel.
Sure. Good afternoon, Chair Reed, members of the committee. Thanks for having us today. I'm Valerie Plummer, the Executive Director of the Oregon Micro Enterprise Network, or OMEN. OMEN is a network of about 70 organizations around the state and collectively served about 12,000 businesses, small businesses around the state last year. I want to share with you three points regarding this bill. And briefly, one is that this bill is really interesting in the way that it complements the state's current economic development efforts. Secondly, the state is in a unique position to both grow this program statewide as well as garner some private and federal funding for the program. And creation of something like the fund and the council that is described in this bill really allows you to think about a demonstration project that is staged in its development. So I'll go on to talk about those points briefly. And just so you know, OMEN has already been doing a bit of a modest program since 2006 on economic gardening. And currently, we've been working with the regional partners in the Portland-Vancouver area, focusing on second-stage high-growth companies. So the points I wanted to make, first, in the way that this bill is complementary to the state's current economic development strategies, this is unique because it actually focuses specifically on second stage high growth potential companies. And one of the biggest challenges that those businesses have is access to markets. You know, you can have the greatest product in the world, but if you're not able to access those markets, whether they be in Oregon or preferably outside of Oregon, looking at traded sector companies, you really have no point in having the product. So the key is really providing customized research, whether it's competitive intelligence or looking at industry trends to make that business more competitive. Secondly, so this program really could support local efforts. Like I mentioned, there's the Portland effort that's happening currently. This could actually garner support on a statewide level with the SBDC network that already exists. You can also help look for both federal and private funding. So this doesn't have any dollars attached to it, but it could create kind of an empty bucket that could eventually bring dollars from outside of Oregon into the state to create this effort. Thirdly, the creation of the council, really it's important to look at demonstration of payoff, the return on investment of such a program. And I would urge you to look at the impact that the program has on individual business revenues and new jobs that are created and the actual access to new markets that we're seeing in those businesses. So eventually that will be bringing the new wealth into each of those communities. As we mentioned regarding the focus of this program, the way it's unique is because it focuses on those traded sector companies, manufacturing companies, primarily export-oriented, also service-based companies. We've worked with a bunch of engineering and architectural firms that are exporting services outside of Oregon and the Pacific Northwest. Focuses on companies that have 10 to 100 employees, typically revenues of about $750 to about $10 million. And we've looked at programs that have at least zero growth. So working to focus on those companies that aren't doing poorly. Many businesses are not growing these days, but we're targeting those businesses that at least have zero growth and not negative growth. So the businesses we're working with, we're targeting about 570 companies that are high growth potential in the city of Portland. And this program really has the potential to go statewide. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Lima.
Good afternoon, Chair Reed, members of the committee. I'm Michael Lanoff, State Director of the Oregon Small Business Development Center Network.
And may I suggest you move the microphone a little farther away from your mouth. That will distort less.
We can hear you just fine. Okay, we good now?
Yep,
okay,
thank you.
Sorry for the inconvenience there.
No problem at all.
On behalf of Oregon's 19 SBDCs, I'm pleased to support this bill as it has the potential to significantly enhance our economic gardening efforts that have been underway since 1983. Since our inception, we've provided guidance and instruction to over 140,000 Oregon entrepreneurs seeking to start and grow their local businesses. Although we have a mandate to serve all of Oregon's current and prospective business owners, we have particular success with innovative, early-stage, fast-growing businesses, also known as gazelles, which hit the 10 to 100 employee range as they mature. Last year, approximately 7% of our in-business clients met this criterion. These firms employed 7,800 Oregonians. Over the years, many SBDC client businesses have attained statewide and regional prominence, including Molecular Probes, Moe's Restaurants, Euphoria Chocolates, and the ubiquitous Dutch Brothers Coffee. Like most of our clients, these firms started small, identified their growth potential, and proceeded to grow. The work we've accomplished with these innovative businesses has fulfilled only a fraction of the demand for services. Statewide in 2008, the 10-employee, the 99-employee firms accounted for 48% of our state's workforce by providing over 680,000 jobs. Our network's efforts to bring our state's economic gardening efforts to fruition will include, upon the bill's passage, administrative support for the council during the remainder of this biennium with no additional state funds. Please note, however, that our currently appropriated state dollars are 100% committed to client services and that our capacity to provide this support stems from the federal dollars leveraged by the state and local host college investments. Again, committee, I appreciate this opportunity to help advance the efforts to nurture fast-growing businesses and communities throughout our wonderful state. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I wonder if there are any questions from the panel. Representative Thatcher.
I just want to make sure I understood. It sounded like you had almost different modules of information or services available for different businesses. Is that correct, or do they, once they sign on, they have to kind of like go through everything that you offer to take them to the next level, or is it some more a la carte.
Representative Thatcher, is that a question for any or
any,
for one
any,
in particular?
Well, okay. I guess I'm gentleman
from
on the
Mr.
end.
Mr. Poacher from Beaverton, please.
Thank you. With our prospective clients, we actually do a triage type process where we actually sit down and talk to that business to learn what they're doing, what their product is, what their plans are, what their objectives are, just to be sure that they're eligible for the program. And then we design the specific services that we provide or the information that we provide to target those particular needs. Example might be is if someone was basically saying they have a product, they are marketing it locally, they would like to identify businesses, say, in Washington, Idaho, or some other state, we would actually work with them to develop a best customer profile, identify those SIC codes, utilize the data resources that we have, and generate a information or a target business list specifically that would look like their best customers in another location. So it becomes very, very specific. And then we do the follow-up, and we work with them to evaluate whether what we offered and what they thought they were getting actually worked.
A follow-up, too? You're talking, okay, you sit down, you talk to them, and based on your criteria, which besides size and number of employees and growth factors, what other criteria do you have, and how many people have you rejected? From the program, not saying you're not eligible to participate, you just don't quite meet our criteria.
Well, let me answer the last part of that question first. Because we are a publicly funded program, we meet and talk with every customer that basically comes through the door. If we determine that a particular business we're talking with isn't ready for these programs, as opposed to saying being eligible, then we look to our partner agencies such as SCORE, or the Small Business Development Center, or the Community College, to help them become more effective and become ready to utilize the data resources that we have. Many times they feel that they need to expand their market, they know they need new customers, but they have no plan in place on how they would even contact them if we gave them the best contact list in the world. So we work with them to develop those processes so that when they do come back, that the information we give them, they can actually implement some sort of strategic plan that would arrive at the goals that they have set forth. So we talk to everybody, we do the triage, we determine whether they belong in our program or whether there's another program that would help them better, and then basically hand carry them to that resource to make sure that they plug in and connect with that.
And I think one more follow-up, sure. Mr. Chair. Thank you. This is kind of cool. I heard that the services are free. I mean, there's no skin in the game at all from the business. I mean, is there a sliding scale, anything like that, or is it just free?
No, it is a free service. I think when we implemented this program, our mayor at the time had the best quote. He said, we've been collecting these license fees and taxes for decades, and we've never given anything back to the business community. This is our way of giving those, giving something back for the benefits that you've paid to the city. So the only time that we do provide any kind of a charge is when we have a business that is going from business to consumer, looking for those kinds of lists. And the only reason we charge for some of that is because we get charged rather substantially to generate that information. So it's just a pass-through. In fact, I think our policy is like the first 300 names you get gratis, but if you need more or a second trip, then if they charge us 10 cents a piece for those, we charge you 10 cents a piece just to recoup that. But business-to-business contacts and those other services and data resources, we provide that information to the business at no charge.
Thank you. That prompts a question for me, and then I think maybe there's some others. To what extent do you find yourself competing with other providers of this sort of service? And if you had a great number of people who met the criteria that sort of passed that first test more than your capacity, how do you determine who you will service first?
Well, so far we haven't had a problem with the second part of your question.
We'll try to help you with that.
We've had a lot of people that have come to us looking for help. A lot of them were in business situations where it was too late.
Okay.
There wasn't anything that we could do, and then we just make some general suggestions, again, with our partners to look for other resources to help build that up. With regard to how do we deal with private sector competition, actually I had the opportunity to sit down with, I guess I would call it a competitor, a small software firm that is actually located in Beaverton that actually does this kind of research. But when you look at their client list, they talk to people like Microsoft and Nike and United Airlines and some very substantial companies. And in that conversation, I was actually looking to solicit them to come into our program, but it turned out they were already doing what we're doing. We're doing it as well, if not better. But the outcome was is that we were not competing. They were providing much more in-depth kind of detailed information, you know, than I would say our average second stage business could ever utilize. Their business targets were much larger companies, and they were expanding their markets pretty much on the same premise that we are, that it's easier to provide this data to help them grow. And they do charge a significant amount of money for those services. But again, they're dealing with a market segment that we can't touch.
That's helpful. Thank you. And by the way, I apologize for mispronouncing your name. It looked like a Y on the end of your handwriting, so that was my mistake. Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess this is too good an opportunity to pass up. This isn't quite on point, but I would like, in all of the years that you've been helping business in Oregon be more efficient and better, you must have encountered problems that we, the legislature, create for those little businesses, and maybe you could tell us, I'll only ask one of you, whichever can get to the microphone first, what you would like, what you think we could change that would make it better for our little businesses in Oregon. That's the first question. And here's the second. If you have, would you think that this bill should in some fashion preclude you from helping one business in Oregon compete against another business in Oregon, and thus you should narrow your focus on only bringing net growth into the state as opposed to beating each other up inside it?
They all want the answer, Representative.
Yeah. I'll take your first one regarding one thing that small businesses need. And one thing we've seen over the past 12 years is the fact that there's not really infrastructure, a system in place to support businesses in all areas of the state. So if you look at, you know, like a scientific experiment, you look at a control group, and then you look at a group of businesses that actually received assistance, you can see the impacts in their revenues and in their ability to grow. Those businesses that actually have assistance, so they have somebody in their corner, like the targeted service providers or the SBDCs, that are actually there to provide guidance to them. So if they hit a rock in their business development, they actually have somebody to say, oh, you know, I need that loan restructured. How can I do that? So there actually isn't that system in place. It's kind of developed over time organically, but the state really could provide a leadership role in really filling it out and making sure that there's statewide coverage.
Representative Richardson.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You get the second half.
Sorry. Go ahead. Chair Reed, Representative Benz, I'll field the second half of that. And oftentimes when we work particularly with groups of businesses and within the small business development centers, and incidentally your center in Treasure Valley, as you know, does a great job, we tend to bring businesses together rather than necessarily have them compete against each other. So oftentimes what results from some of the group work we do, some shared resources and supply chain, those kinds of activities. So inevitably, sir, there will be inner competition even in a small community like Ontario. On the other hand, though, I think the net value, you'll see more businesses working collaboratively than not within Oregon, and there's a community spirit that develops, and we see it all the time, particularly with our flagship program statewide, what we call our Small Business Management Program, which combines counseling and training where it's a lot of peer learning that goes on. So ultimately, the businesses teach and learn from one another more than lock horns, if that somewhat makes sense.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Sorry for cutting that off. Representative Richardson.
Thank you. I've kind of gotten a little confused by the questions and the answers, because the three of you are coming not representing the committee that's being created here, but from your own work in Beaverton and elsewhere. And so when we're getting answers, it sounds like your answers are how you're doing things presently, but I don't see how that directly relates to what's being created in this bill. And so the fact that you don't charge fees in Beaverton doesn't change the fact that the Economic Gardening Council may set fees to be charged program services, and we're setting up a full council here, and it was mentioned earlier that this will be focused, I thought I heard, on Portland and then could be expanded from there. And so I'm not real clear as to, one, why we need this if we have, if we're funding presently and you're obtaining funds for the small business development centers, you got 19 of them, and other communities are doing what you're doing in Beaverton, and we have a statewide association for entrepreneurs or microeconomics or however that works. And so I don't know where the coordination is, other than we all agree that it's a good thing to promote small businesses, especially Gazelles, which you said were 7%, but acted like it was a major deal. 7% is not real significant compared to 100%. So it's interesting. That's for another discussion.
Sure. Representative Richardson, maybe I can jump in there. I think your questions are good, and perhaps we can hold those for Representative Smith as the primary author of the bill, not to put words in his mouth, but I would suggest that perhaps these folks can talk about, as you suggested, their various experiences with the general topic of economic gardening. If I understood Representative Smith's intent, we'll come back up, and then we can ask some more about that sort of question. I was Representative Gilliam next, and then Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm pleased that we'll get back to some of this with Representative Smith, because I'm grateful to him for bringing this forward. And I have to say that the Mr. Chair, that the agricultural metaphor is a good one, and it's encouraging, because it was just a week ago that we sort of practice what I would term economic field burning, and yet here we are a week later talking about economic growth. So that's encouraging to me. I guess the question I had was to our friend Mr. Is it Lanoff?
Yes, sir.
You mentioned Mohs, so here's my question.
Sure.
I love Mohs.
Me too.
But we all agree that, you know, helping businesses that are successful go to the next level makes a lot of sense, and I think that's what you all are saying. But what if I'm I got a great idea for a chowder house on the coast, and I can't find anybody who's interested in helping me or how to get a foothold? How does that play, because Mohs has been around, and I'm not picking on Mohs because I really do like Mohs. How does that play for folks who are trying to get started? Favoring, for lack of a better term, a place that would seem to be pretty successful like Mohs.
Well, as far as the assistance that such a business could receive, particularly at that concept stage, you have the idea for a chowder house, and you're looking where to take it, what your niches are, et cetera. The small business development centers will help anyone, because we've assisted Mohs in the past. Doesn't necessarily mean, hey, that was our one and only shot at helping a chowder house. So I don't know if that quite answers your question, but we would work with you individually, look at the niche that you want to pursue, the locations where you choose to locate, or usually start small, is what we encourage almost all of our clients, and just help you get started in that respect.
Just one quick follow-up. So, at least in your practice of EG, it doesn't necessarily have to be an existing small business. It can also be interesting new ones.
See, Chair Reed, Representative Gilliam, in 2009, we served nearly 6,000 clients statewide. Of those, 38% were what we call the pre-venture, the folks like you just described.
Okay.
I have the idea. The remainder were existing businesses. So we serve businesses all over the gamut. Our sweet spot, if you will, are those businesses which, to clarify for Representative Richardson, sir, 7% of our in-business clients met that criterion of the 10-employee to 99-employee firm. Statewide, sir, that's 48% of the
of everyone employed in Oregon, and those data I obtained from the 2008 Oregon Employment Department report, where it broke down the firms by size. So the 10 employee to 99 employee firms statewide have huge impacts, or 48%. In our little niche that we serve, those 6,000 businesses in 2009, only 7% hit that niche. So we do serve a preponderance of pre-venture clients. We work collaboratively with some of the micro-enterprise programs that Valerie supports statewide as well. The pre-venture need is huge. We've worked very closely, in fact, with the Oregon Employment Department, with the claimants that they referred through the Self-Employment Assistance Program. Been a big demand on our staff time the last couple of years, as you can imagine.
Yeah. Of the 6,000 that you've worked with, are they sort of on a first-in, first-out sort of basis, or do you have any sort of tiering or prioritizing?
Chair Reed, we work with long-term clients. So in 2009, many of the businesses we serve were folks with whom we've had long-term relationships. But generally, it's with similar services. You schedule your appointment, we get you in just as soon as we can. The number of pre-venture clients and the actual advice we provide is somewhat repetitive. Who you call to start, you get your business license, how you register your name, etc. So we try to triage, if you will, those clientele into group counseling. And our sweet spot, again, is to work with those fast-growing businesses. The state of Oregon and our other stakeholder, U.S. Small Business Administration, measures our effectiveness on economic impact. Jobs created, jobs retained, capital formation, new business starts. So we tend to try to take our limited resources and look to see where we can make the most with our staff time.
Thank you very much. Representative Holby?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll defer my question to Representative Smith.
Okay. Are there any other questions? Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony. Representative Smith, there are a couple more on your list, or those part of your program?
I think there are a couple more. This might be a really good chance for me to answer questions and other people can testify.
Please. Do you want to take questions individually, Representative Smith, or do you want to try and make a sort of a summation first?
Mr. Chair, for the record, Jefferson Smith, representing District 47. I'll try to respond to some of the concerns and questions I heard, and I'm relatively confident I won't do a comprehensive job, and so I'm happy to take a second volley after I take the first crack. The first is to be clear about some of the value that we're hoping to provide through the bill, and to be very clear, if this bill passes, it won't be my fault. It wasn't my idea, but I happen to think it's a very good one. In response to Representative Richardson's question, why focus on the 7%? Very fair question. I think a couple answers. The first is because that is where I don't want to go as far as to say it's a gap, because there are existing economic development services that work hard to provide some services to that sector, but we do provide some, and through our SBDCs, do provide, I think, some excellent services to our startup businesses. If I'm a donut shop and I'm looking for a $20,000 PDC loan, they'll help me get that. So there's, as he said, sort of a huge sector of the business they work with are what we might call sort of a stage one business. That smaller sector of stage two businesses represents nearly half of the jobs and the job growth. And it is where, if you're OBDD, where some of your thrust needs to be on both those and on business acquisition, right, where there are a set of services such as market research, such as amplified mentorship that could be provided that would be helpful. So as part of kind of a continuum analysis of bolstering that, and the second answer is because it's high leverage, because that's a real place. If we're looking, how do we budget scarce resources, this is a pretty good place to try to do it when we're making those strategic decisions, not in this session, but in the future. Next, I would say, you also, Representative Richards, made the point, is it starting in Portland? To our knowledge at this point, the short answer is no. I mean, that's not our objective. There are local efforts, and Beaverton and Newburgh is working to start one, and in Portland is trying to start one. The intent of doing something with this body would be quite the contrary of merely supporting those, but rather, and this would be for the council or the task force to determine, but my advice would probably be that we try at least one pilot outside the metro area, whether in Southern Oregon or on the dry side of the state or et cetera. And I think that's one of the values of doing this, is not just a double down on places that are already trying it, but hey, wait a minute, how can we do it in other areas, in other areas of our state? The couple of you asked, I think it was Representative Thatcher, asked question about is it free or costly? I think that's to be decided. I think that's one of the good questions. I can make personally tell a good story about either way. And you could imagine sort of like ESPN.com and ESPN Insider, right? There's certain things you get for free, but if you want to know about, you know, the draft rumors, you know, you need to pay, you know, the money I pay every month to also receive ESPN the magazine. And I could imagine us picking sort of a two-tier strategy, but that again will be up to people more versed in this sector than I am, and working in close concert with OBDD and the SBDCs and the existing kind of economic development mechanisms that we have to figure out what's the smartest thing to do. Representative Reed, you asked a question about will this compete with things in the private sector. I think the answer, I think his answer was really great. I'll amplify it just to say this. Part of the challenge, if you're Euphoria Chocolates, right, and you've gotten your little loan and somebody helped you maybe with an early business plan and now you're cooking and you want to grow and be maybe even a chocolatier to the region and not just the state or maybe to the country or the world, it is, first of all, you are very unlikely to have the market research expertise within your office. But even if you want to outsource it, you know, budgeting those dollars is relatively rare among some of these and less likely to do. And as we've seen in the sector, I think why we Littleton saw there are able to tell their story, why they're working on it in Beaverton, is that this is a place where we can add value. If I go and hang out a shingle, I'm going to go look for Microsoft and other larger going concerns in the private sector. Another question that was asked, and I don't remember by whom, was exclusivity. Is it y'all come, or are there some criteria for selection? And that might have been also you, Representative Thatcher. I think that's also to be decided. I think part of the purpose of doing a Stage 2 economic development strategy is to focus on those high growth potential businesses. There are at least two ways to go about selectivity, however. One is through selection criteria, which we are not putting in the bill, and second is through the kind of service that we try to amplify. And that could be the kind of services most helpful to a Stage 2 business and would be the kind of thing that they would opt into, less likely your Stage 1 or even Stage 3 business, like a market research or like enhanced mentorship or something like that.
Let's see if actually we can wrap it up. I just want to make sure we're getting to our other.
And that's the extent of my notes. Other than there's a set of amendments we're moving forward, I appreciate the chair's advice to continue with the hearing, knowing how just jam tight we are with the schedule in this special session. So I'm happy to answer those talk about those in response. If there's further questions, otherwise happy to wrap.
I think I'm not sure ESPN the magazine will need to be a part of this, but let's see if there's a second volley anywhere.
They're not based in Oregon, so I'm not. They will not receive services, I assure you.
Representative Holby, you wanted to defer your question, I think.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I just have a fundamental question, and I, like Representative Gilliam, was expecting to see Cisco testifying in front of us today. And I just don't, I'm trying to get my head around this, because we just spent a lot of time going through the Oregon Business Development Department and doing some work. So I'm trying to understand the purpose of this council, in as much as aren't these a lot of things that we're already doing in other agencies? The Oregon Business Development Council or Department is also doing things. We have workforce training departments that are doing things and university systems. And I understand doing more is definitely better. But, you know, I'm trying to make sure that we don't have a whole nother layer of bureaucracy on top of what we already have and trying to make sure that the system works good, and I'm just a little concerned about you know, I'm looking at what some of the things this program is council supposed to be doing, and it looks like the description could fit some of the things we've already tasked the Oregon Business Development Department to do.
And before you answer, Representative Smith, let me point out that just over your shoulder is Paul Grove from the Business Development Department, if you want some help with your
college answer. Friend, that I hope he will remember.
And
that.
Then I have a second part to that question, if you can, because I know that one's pretty simple, but. The other one comes about by the funding part of this, and I guess I don't see any direct state funding of this written into the bill, and you, because it says they may establish a fund to accept contributions into this fund from other sources that they may solicit, whether it's a federal program or whatever, and sort of what happens if, you know, you don't have any contributions into that fund and the state's not putting any money into it other than staffing it, so there's an expense to staffing it, and so what happens to the council if they, are they pretty confident they're going to get contributions from outside the state of Oregon?
Good. I hear a couple questions in there I'll try to answer. In terms of the value added, I heard three things essentially. What's the value added? What's the risk of duplication, or how are we avoiding it? And third, what about DOE? The first piece, the value added, some of it is about answered that if we have, as a state, as Beaverton has said, and as the local, these local stakeholders said, hey, it'd be valuable if the state had something called economic gardening in its constellation as we go to the Lowe's Foundation, as we go to, I'm forgetting the other two, I'm sorry, Alex, the other private foundations who have sent signals already, they want to support this kind of work. We have heard, I think it's part of the impetus, well, not I think, I know it's part of the impetus of the bill, that it will be helpful to add that in the grant applications. So that's part of the purpose. The second is the and in some of the amendments, we will be narrowing, you know, trying to tailor the bill. Not only are we considering changing it from like a council, for instance, to a task force to bring back recommendations to the legislature in 2011 session, but also make clear that what we're talking about is continuing to look at, as I think we need to, the continuum of business services, right, that has, you know, not only could we do more, but as we think to add back, I mean, if you're Michael Lanoff and you just had a significant portion of the state portion of your budget cut in the last session, and he's thinking about what's the strategy by which we add back and what should we invest in, an economic gardening program provides, I think, a really good opportunity as we look at that reinvestment. And in terms of some of the, well, maybe that's the whole of my answer.
That's fine.
Yeah, hopefully I answered your questions. The gaps will work not to duplicate. We're working to make it a continuum. The funding, funding, grants plus add back going forward as we reinvest in economic development. And so hopefully that's, you got what you need. I need your vote.
Any other questions? I don't see any. So it's fair to say that the amendments you're working on will change the nature of the bill.
Yeah.
I'm just sort of reiterating that for the benefit of the three people who have signed up to testify following yours.
And if you'll provide me leave just to say a few things, they might even decide they can save their time. There are a few things we're considering already. One is, and I'll go very fast, one is...
I didn't answer your question yet, but go ahead.
Oh, no, is that appropriate?
Yes, that's fine. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Jefferson Smith. I represent District 47. In the Oregon Legislature, the one is moving from council to task force. To these are all to be considered. We want to meet with the stakeholders to make sure that all these are cool. Second is reduce the fiscal impact by making clear that OUS Community College will not be called out to do required specific work. Third, to recommend rather than develop curriculum. That was a word choice by LFO, or excuse me, by Legislative Council, to develop curriculum. Rather, we will recommend curriculum. Make it clear that we are, at the suggestion of Representative David Edwards, that we are focusing on a continuum of business services and to tailor it to that purpose. Also to bring back an explanation of how it will fit within a strategy of minority and women-owned businesses, perhaps how it's targeted through the five clusters already in the Oregon Business Plan, and perhaps more of a highlighter on the specific elements of market research and enhanced mentorship and other specifically stage two business services.
Thank you very much, Representative Smith. So the three people on our list remain.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. Drew Hagedorn, Joyce Garrett, and John, who I think has a last name that starts with S, followed maybe by an A and a T. Is that ringing any bells for anyone? I don't see anyone. Mr. Hagedorn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee member Drew Hagedorn on behalf of the Oregon University System. Representative Smith already alluded to the issue the university system had, which was the recommend versus develop the curricula. We believe that's in the purview of the provost and faculty to develop the curriculum. So we talked to him about that. I think he's fine with proceeding that way, and so we're okay.
We'll encourage you to keep in touch with the amendments. Thank you. Joyce Garrett or Paul Grove, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Paul Grove with the Business Development Department, and just want to jump in here really quickly and to Representative Holvey's question, and as was relayed to us from our commission, you know, the initial draft of the bill, there was that overlap or duplication of services provided. You know, the vast majority of the work that the department does is with existing small to mid-sized business firms, and so we've had discussions with Representative Smith on the issues that he had mentioned to you that would be going forward in the amendment process, and that we're going to work with the representative closely on that to ensure that we have a nice clean product at the end and we avoid any kind of duplication in terms of the services that we provide, but ensure that we fulfill and meet maybe those areas where there's a gap on the continuum of services that he talked about.
Thank you very much. Last call for Joyce Garrett and John with the mystery last name starting with S.
Mr. See them. Chair, wait, while they're coming. Are they coming up?
This was their last call. They didn't respond.
You didn't have questions.
You have a question for Mr. Garrett? For
just, Mr. Grove, I'm just interested in what Representative Smith was like in college.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we can take this outside if you'd like.
I'd like.
Thank you very much. It's a nice note to end the testimony on this bill. So we will await the amendments and close the public hearing on House Bill 3644. And as promised, open a hearing, a public hearing on House Bill 3605. I'd like to give us a brief summary, Beth, and while she's doing that, Representative Doherty. Also on our list, Peggy Woolsey, John, this, I think maybe this is, no, I was looking up here too. This might be the same John with the mysterious S name as before.
Put his name in the wrong place.
So, committee members, for the record, House Bill 3605, you have a fiscal statement there. There's also a sub-referral to Joint Ways and Means. The measure removes requirements that applicants to Oregon Business Development Fund must have sufficient collateral, removes other requirements. This is a bill that we heard in January. There's also an amendment in front of you, the proposed -1 amendment that would replace the Sections 1, 2, and 3, and it would allow total amount of money loaned from Oregon Business Development Fund or business development project to exceed 50% of the loan of project costs if two or more lenders have denied financing for more than 50% of the project and the only available financing is less than 50%, in addition to several other passages. It does include, though, still the sunset and the emergency clause.
Thank you very much. Representative Doherty.
Okay, thank you, Chair Reed, Representative Vice Chair Benz, and members of the committee. Thank you for taking time again to hear House Bill 3605. Since the hearing in January, I've been working with Business Oregon to refine the provisions of this bill and to address some concerns raised during the January hearing and further discussions with Business Oregon. These amendments before you create safeguards for the department and the Oregon Business Development Fund while encouraging the use of private capital when possible and available. There is also a sunset provision included for the end of the 2011 legislative session, which would give the option to extend or modify the program if deemed appropriate. Paul Grove and John Saras from Business Oregon are here with me today and can answer more technical questions regarding implementation and the effect these changes will have on business. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Grove.
For the record, my name is Paul Grove with Business Oregon, Chair Reed, members of the committee. Just very briefly, as was testified to back in January when we came before you on the initial hearing, our director, Tim McCabe, noted that within this program we've seen an increase in activity for small to mid-sized businesses to help meet their capital needs, capital that is critical at this time and capital that might not otherwise be made available. With respect to the amendments before you, we do feel that there are appropriate safeguards in place. I think the first item that had raised an issue before dealt with the collateral requirement or the removal thereof initially, and that's been reinserted to provide good and sufficient collateral for approval. The second item deals with, as the representative spoke of, the sunset date to, again, address the short-term need, and we can re-examine the proposed changes later on down the road. And I think the third and most important piece in this was to ensure at the end of the day that the department is, for lack of a better term, a lender of last resort. There was a misperception out there that through the bill that we would be in the banking business. And what we do with respect to this fund is provide gap financing in partnership with our banking partners, our economic development organizations, to help meet the need that they might not otherwise get through those traditional funding sources. So at the end of the day, we wanted to reaffirm that with the committee and others to note that we, again, our role in this is secondary, and for a prospective applicant business firm to go to the traditional funding sources first before they come to the department. And with that, I'll leave it to John Saris, and he might have some comments or be able to answer any technical questions.
Mr. Saris.
Chair Reed, members of the committee, for the record, my name is John Saris. I'm the business services manager at Oregon Business Development Department. And really, to reiterate what Paul Grove had mentioned earlier, these ideas are designed to help address short-term capital issues for businesses and businesses having difficulty obtaining credit in this challenging market. As Paul alluded, it is going to be vital to not supplant our financial partners out there. We have a very good working relationship with the banking community, and that is going to need to be, remain intact and whole through this process. So happy to answer any specific questions about the proposed changes and the impacts those may have.
Thank you. Representative Benz, I thought you might. And Representative Richardson, you're next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm looking at your amendment. Do you have the amendment? Page 2, line 17. Can you explain to me at least what that means?
Do you have a copy, Mr. Chair?
I'm sorry, I do not.
Someone does there, though. It looks like yes. They're looking.
So
page 2, line 17 reads, money can be loaned if, and then the second part of the if is, there are payments other than the scheduled principal and interest payments. I don't follow that. What does that mean?
Chair Reed, Representative Benz, members of the committee. That provision was put into the statute, and I believe it was 2 years ago. And what this specifically allows is for the department to issue what is called the OBDF, or Oregon Business Development Fund Royalties Program. And the Royalties Program was designed to help the department lend to very early stage businesses, and this provision basically allowed for the implementation of the royalties payments in statute.
Is that moving from somewhere else? Because it looks like it's new as it's written here in the amendment.
That is in the original draft of the...
Okay.
Yeah, this is
this is good.
Original draft of the bill, but not in statute.
Understood.
It should be in statute currently.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the concept is that subparts A, capital B, capital C, lines 16 through 21 are three separate windows of opportunity. It's not as though you have to be in a municipality and then it follows down through.
Correct. It's a or.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. What has the department's experience been so far in recouping that which has been loaning out?
Chair Reed, Representative Benz, member of the committee. The Oregon Business Development Loan Fund has been very successful in the past. It's recouped, on average, the fund has grown every year since 1997. And so as far as a loss rate, about 1.8% is the amount of loss that the fund has experienced over the life since 1983. But it should be mentioned that capitalization for the revolving loan fund has been about $18 million. That total program right now has about a $30 million value with loans out and cash on hand. And so it has grown since the capitalization.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The growth has been in interest accumulation, or has it been further funding from the legislature?
Chair Reed and Representative Benz. $18 million has been the capitalization. The fund has not been recapitalized or capitalized for 5 years, since 2003. So it's a little longer, sorry. And it's really been the interest and the repayment that has grown the fund.
Thank you. Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple questions on it. If the focus is on business development projects, why is it that counties and municipalities have, they don't even have the limitations that other businesses have, because they can have loans without going to lenders and seeking outside loans first? What kind of businesses are we trying to promote for counties and municipalities getting into?
Chair Reed, Representative Richardson. To the best of my knowledge, it is a very seldomly used provision within the statute. I believe I'm only aware of two or three since inception in 1983 that have qualified either through the municipality component or through what would then be provision B on line 17, the other payments. So these are really seldomly used clauses. And as far as specific examples, it could be that a city would own a theater or something along those lines and have capital improvements that they may want to consider. And for some reason they don't have, or this may be easier due to the size of the project than going through traditional lending. But once again, very seldomly used small projects.
Okay. Follow up. I'm noticing on, I'm looking at the amended wording, and on page 1 and page 2, top of page 2, it says that in certain circumstances you can exceed 50% of the cost of the project, you know, if certain qualifications are met. And then I'm over on page 4, on lines 5 to 7, and it says the total amount of monies loaned from the fund for a business development project may not exceed 50% of the cost of the project. And so is there a contradiction there, or am I...
Chair Reed, Representative Richardson, I might defer to Legislative Council on this. I believe that they're still in the room, but I think that and I'm not finding that particular provision off the top of my head right here, but I believe that the particular provision was included to revert back to the previous language due to the inclusion of a sunset date.
Okay, where would follow up? I'm not sure I see where the sunset date is.
Let's see someone nodding in the back. We can ask for a little help.
Pardon. Thank you.
We're going to ask for some little more expert opinion on that specific question. She's coming right next to you here.
Thank you, Chair Reed.
Thank you.
Members of the committee. Representative Richardson, I'm Blissa Seidlick, Deputy Legislative Counsel, and Mr. Grove was exactly right. That is a sunset provision. The second one that you referred to, I believe it was on page 4, and it reverts the language back to what it was before this bill passes, assuming it does.
Okay, may I ask just where does it say that? I just missed where it said the date for the sunset.
Sure, Representative Richardson and members of the committee, if you look at page 5, section 5, it indicates that the amendments by sections 3 and 4 become operative on July 1, 2011, and that means that the amendment...
Okay, gotcha. Okay, got it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Just a quick question. Representative, is there another... identical or similar bill coming from the Senate?
I think that the Senate is considering something that is similar,
but not identical.
But I'm not certain of that. I might ask Representative Doherty if she could answer that, since I think she's probably more likely to be versed on what's going on in this topic generally.
Yeah, Senator Bonamici has something that is similar. It's still in the same vein of helping small business, being able to go through and partner capital along with the current banking situation. And so the two of us have kind of been working a little bit together to make sure that that there are similarities but differences in the bill.
And this, Beth, am I correct in remembering you saying that this has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means?
That is correct.
So they may meet there.
I have one question though. Just
Mr. Richardson.
On page 3, section 2, subparagraph 3, it says, the director shall have authority in the director's sole discretion
to approve loans for business development projects in the amount of, and it's going to go up to $250,000 or less, and to disperse funds for the projects. I'm just wondering, how do we keep this from becoming a political plum that, you know, these projects, because for whatever political reasons, get approved and these don't? I mean, how do we focus on business development and not have this become a director's, I mean, the executive branch's ability to direct any way they choose to?
I'd be happy to let the department have an answer to that, but I would suggest that, that the same question might be applicable in the current situation, too.
It is.
The amount.
No, I agree. It's not. We're just looking at the whole statute.
Sure.
And so is there a way that we can help assure that it be, remains neutral? We may have a Republican governor in a year, and so everybody want to know about this.
Sure. If I may, Chair Reed, Representative Richardson, when John Sayers can certainly chime in and speak to it in greater detail than I could, when a project is considered, we're looking at the economic development benefits associated with it, whether it be jobs created, jobs retained, economic diversification, things of those of that nature as we move forward. So while it might not necessarily be specified in front of you right here, it's outlined as part of the policy criteria in the review and approval process, in addition to reviewing its business plan to ensure that it's sound.
Can we just trust?
Mr. Harris, did you want to say anything to add to that? Or
I think Paul answered it quite well.
Okay. Very good. Other questions? So there are two more people who have signed up to testify. Thank you very much. Peggy Woolsey and Jack Hisselman. Ms. Woolsey.
Representative Reed and committee members. My name is Peggy Woolsey. I'm with Tax Fairness Oregon. We were not pleased to see this being introduced last month. However, we are extremely pleased with the changes that have been made in the amendment, and we appreciate your consideration of this bill because we recognize that small businesses are the backbone of our state, and we appreciate that. Thank you.
That's very brief. Thank you very much. Ms. Wilson.
Chair Reed, members of the committee, for the record, Jack Hisselman appearing today before you on behalf of the Oregon Economic Development Association. We're Oregon's only statewide trade association representing economic development professionals. We have more than 200 members, which are individuals, organizations, and government entities that work on the front line of business recruitment and retention throughout the state. We're here in support of House Bill 3605. We think the changes to the program provide necessary and perhaps in some cases overdue flexibility that will make our members' access to the program more convenient. And I've submitted written testimony and don't need to get into it in detail, but as Mr. Saris indicated, I actually said in my testimony the last time the legislature took a look at the capitalization of this resource was 2005. I think Mr. Saris is right. Assembly actually looked at it in 2003. The bonds were probably sold and the capital was put into the fund somewhere in that 2004-2005 time frame. But the bottom line is this program has not received anything approaching adequate funding from this assembly to do its work. It's under extreme stress right now as regional banks in a lot of Oregon communities are capital impaired and just aren't doing the level of lending that they did earlier in the last decade. And we would urge you, and I recognize that this bill has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, and we'd urge you either through that channel or perhaps later this year through the Emergency Board to take a serious look at appropriating resources. We've had conversations with the department. They have applications right now in the queue that effectively would clear the program out. So while these changes are great and will be warmly received by my members, they're going to be meaningless because we're not going to do deals. So we'd urge you to take a look at the funding. And I recognize you guys don't have the pocketbook in this committee, but if you could, those of you who are on Ways and Means and those of you who have friends that are, we'd urge you to take a look at recapitalizing this fund because it's been passed over time and again, and the need is very acute right now. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I share your concern about the financial condition of our banks. The Oregonian's article on Sterling Bank, for example. When you say we should fund this program, what kind of money are you talking? Because $30 million is compared to, I think, their loss was close to $1
billion. Right.
So when you say we should fund it, what kind of number would you suggest would really make a difference?
Representative Pence, Chair Reed, well, you probably don't want to give me the blank check, but...
Be quoting Senator Dirksen at this point.
But... And Mr. Saris may be able to come up and answer this, but my recollection is the recapitalization that occurred, and the last time you visited it was on the order of $8 million. There were some lottery bonds that were proceeds that were appropriated to recapitalize the fund, and I think that was on the order of $8 or $9 million. I didn't bring my papers up with me. I don't know how much they're going to run through if they approve all their transactions. I think they have another $8 million in the queue, roughly. They may come up and tell you that, that they'll exhaust through the end of the biennium. And there's more deal. I mean, deals will get turned away because they have enough in the queue now to respond to all the money that they have. So Mr. Saris is here. We can talk to you more about that.
Saris. Representative Benz, members of the committee, just to recap, you know, obviously we can't make a recommendation as far as what we could use. We'll leave that to the discretion of our legislature, but their last capitalization was $5 million, and right now in our queue, we do have about a $9 million balance with about $4.5 million in approvals and about $5 million in pending applications. You do the simple math, we're going to have an excess of demand on the program with the resources that are currently there. We are at this point taking a look and considering the preferences as outlined in statute and rule and applying those to try to make sure that we're investing the state's resources in the appropriate locations and getting the most out of the department dollars that we have available. So
thank you. Are there other questions?
I don't see any.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we'll be carrying this bill over till our next meeting on Thursday. Looking forward to seeing it progress at that point. If there aren't any other questions or comments on House Bill 3605, we'll close the public hearing there and open public hearing on House Bill 3633. Invite Representative Boone and anyone you'd like to bring with you for the first round forward. And Beth gives a little summary as we go.
House Bill 3633, you heard this also in January during the interim meeting. It stipulates that Oregon's state goal of having at least 8% of Oregon's retail energy load come from small-scale renewable energy projects must be at least half derived from tidal energy, ocean thermal energy, wind energy generated from a jetty-mounted device, or wave energy generated from a jetty-mounted device by 2025.
Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And for the record, Deborah Boone, I represent House District 32 on the beautiful upper left coast of our state. Now that it's getting close to the end of your day and you're sitting there thinking, we just heard this. Well, this bill has changed dramatically and for the better. And I just wanted to let you know that I will be probably gutting and stuffing my own bill. We have some language that we are considering for amending this, but what we have decided to do, and we had a couple of meetings on the phone and some people meeting with various and sundry usual suspects in this sector, have come up with the idea of utilizing a task force to bring back some report of what is since this sector is so new and is changing daily, it seems, we need to do this to encourage further discovery of opportunities for ocean energy or hydrokinetic energy, whatever you want to call it, from the coast to provide clean renewable energy to our coastal communities and entertain some new opportunities that are out there. This state has been being watched all around the world for opportunities for hydrokinetic energy. And we've talked with the part of the that's not even in the bill that you're looking at. When I talk about a task force, one of the things that we don't want to do is reinvent the wheel. So we've gotten semi-agreement, pending some further discussions with the agency that runs them, our commission that runs the Territorial Sea Plan Advisory Committee, which is already established, has a well-established and a bit of a track record along the coastal communities of our state. And they've been part of their task was to add, as an amendment to the Territorial Sea Plan, the utilization of ocean energy. We are not going to be having them set rates. The PUC, that's in their purview. That's staying out of that completely. This is a natural extension of their original mission, should the commission agree to do so. They're in a kind of a hiatus right now for the next few months while they wait for some information to come in on their current task, which is gathering more information as to mapping, et cetera, on the coast. Let's see, what else did we do? But there, I know there are several other people who may want to weigh in on this. And since we don't really have anything in writing right now for you to consider, this is kind of like a progressive dinner.
I was going to say a preview. I like that
yeah.
element too. That's good.
And it's that time of day, so for cookies, you'll get somebody next. I will stay to the end and come back if there are any questions or anything.
Thank you.
I know this is a little bit different, but this is a different kind of session. So,
well said, Representative Boone.
Thank you.
So, Terry Thompson, Lincoln County Commissioner Bob Repine, and Jeff Bissonnette.
A couple of former colleagues in a past life, right? Okay.
I'd like to defer to my senior colleague, ex-colleague.
Very good, Mr. Repine.
Wow, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I assume he was referring to you as opposed to Mr. Bissonnette.
I don't know what he means by senior.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know what that necessarily means. It's age or tenure. Mr. Chairman, committee members, I am Bob Repine. I'm Assistant Director for the Department of Energy. I manage the energy development services. Now, why I hesitate on it, we just formally named that as of today, so I haven't got EDS, which is the acronym for it, in my name, but Director Long has done, I think many of you have heard, that we've consolidated all the economic or the energy activities that pertain to loans or credit applications. So the SELP program, which is a small energy loan program, the BETSI, Business Energy Tax Credit, the ARRA funds that we manage for the federal government, for the state of Oregon, and soon the RETSI program, which is a residential energy tax credit program, will all reside under one location under my direction. So that's my new role. In light of Representative Boone's comments about the bill changing, my points may not be as important today, but I think Director Long wanted to make sure that we were on the record saying this. And relative to the bill, we appreciate and we understand the interest of opportunities for our coastal communities. And the items that are listed here are ones that are prevalent around the world, and we've seen other applications of them. We've just not necessarily matured some of those industries yet in Oregon, other than possibly the wave. Buoy type waves, not so much jetty based waves, wind or wave actuaries. The concern we have, or the comment we'd like to add, is that our assumption is that if this bill was to pass, and even though I know Representative Boone said it's going to change, but let's assume for the moment, if the bill was going to pass, that the agency's assumption would be that it would not have an impact on our current programs, particularly the BETSI program. Because that what you have is the opportunity to change renewable opportunities in the state of Oregon that we've not pursued, but by doing this, you put more applications in that come to us to fund them using the BETSI program. And in the spirit of trying to put the sideboards on the BETSI program, which I think many of you are enjoying or hearing about, we just want to make you aware of the fact that there is there's a cause and effect of activity when you do things like this. And so if you were to put more of these into the renewable energy commodities that we use for energy, that
there's a high probability many of them would be coming to get Betsy credits, which then creates another problem on the other side. So
there are at least three of us on this committee who are actively engaged in that and thinking about that regularly. Thank you.
So our assumption is that they wouldn't have an impact on our Betsy program.
Thank you.
My name's Terry Thompson from Lincoln County. And when I first read this bill, I was concerned about it because I wasn't sure that these were industries that were well enough fleshed out. But I like what Debbie's, Representative Boone, I've known Debbie for so many years, Representative Boone said. This probably is at a point where it needs to go to a committee or to the Department of Energy and back to a committee to be evaluated. And I like the approach of what it does for coastal communities, but timing's important. And what I'm afraid is this was a bill that had a good idea, but its timing isn't right yet. And it will be in the future. So I know that the groups are meeting out in the hall, and I support where they're going. I think it'll wind up being a positive thing for the state of Oregon.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Mr. Commissioner. Mr. Bissonnette.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jeff Bissonnette, representing the Citizens Utility Board of Oregon. We represent residential ratepayers, and in light of Representative Boone's comments, I guess we'll wait and see the amendments as they come. The issues we were going to raise were about some earlier, they're draft amendments that I saw earlier that were directing the PUC to set rates, and that's something that raises a fair amount of concern for us if that is out of there and it is a task force. We have no problem with that. We have no problem with the issue and figuring out how to diversify our energy portfolio. We'll look at, obviously, and follow the issue and make sure that it's, the funding issues are addressed appropriately and that sort of thing. But we'll stay tuned. But thank you for considering the issue.
Thank you, Mr. Bissonnette. Any questions for these gentlemen? Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Support, I think, what Bob and what Terry have just said. I was concerned about the initial bill potentially leading to a balkanization of incentives for renewable energy. And while, as a member of the Coastal Caucus, it probably would have benefited my district greatly, I am concerned that for the good of all of Oregon and for the development of renewable energies at their maximum potential, that we not play one region of the state off against another. I was also concerned, too, that for those renewable energy sources that are not yet mature industries, such as wind generation, I think there's a lot of potential for further expansion there. And I was very concerned that this type of approach might actually fetter the expanded development of existing green energy or those sectors that hold perhaps the majority of green energy output. And to divert that from a rapidly expanding sector to others that maybe are having a difficulty getting off the ground, I think would have been inappropriate. And I would rather see those resources go to development. For instance, Oregon State University, which is actually cultivating a lot of the production mechanisms, be it wave generators or whatever, I think our resources are better placed there, and then for us to allow the market then to determine which one of those sectors grows the most rapidly. I truly believe that sometimes by loving to death a particular sector, in this instance green energy development, that we actually may be placing unintended fetters on the development of it. I was very concerned. So I'm very glad that Representative Boone is moving in this direction.
Thank you, Representative Witt. Other questions? I don't see any. Thank you, gentlemen, very much. Stephanie Thornton, Gus Gates, and another slightly illegible name, Paul Wooden. Did I get it right?
Yeah.
like I have to work on my penmanship.
Just, I got the it's just the first name that was kind of difficult. But please go ahead, whichever order you'd prefer.
Good afternoon. Chairman Reed, members of the committee, my name is Stephanie Thornton. I'm an independent contractor right now working with a company out of Norway who develops wave-generating jetties from breakwaters. And it's very interesting. And right now, they're in the early stages of exploring the possibility of looking at a project such as theirs at the port of Garibaldi and tying that or associating it with the redevelopment of the North Jetty, which is currently underway and expected to be finished by this fall. I'm here today to speak on my behalf. I'm not speaking on behalf of the Norwegian company, but my testimony is brief. And just in short, I wanted to lend support to Representative Boone's legislation, to HB 3633. I think it's a tremendous step in the right direction in terms of helping advance and lay a solid foundation for building this this industry, and it's, you know, as you know, this industry is in its very early stages, so it needs the help and support to help move it forward. And I think with the changes that are being proposed, that is certainly moving in the right direction and lays a good framework for further discussions next year as well. And just in closing, I also wanted to endorse my personal thought and recommendation for the idea of utilizing the existing task force, the Territorial Sea Advisory Committee. I was involved with them early on, and they're certainly a very knowledgeable and experienced forum that already is very familiar with a lot of the issues, and it would certainly, if they got involved in this as the task force, it would certainly be a great step in being able to tackle these tough issues on how to develop this industry. So that's it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Thornton. Let's hear from the rest of the panel, and perhaps we'll have questions.
Chair Reed, members of the House Sustainability and Economic Development Committee, for the record, my name is Gus Gates, and I'm the Oregon Policy Coordinator with the Surfrider Foundation and a lifelong coastal resident from the community of Florence. And on behalf of our over 600 Surfrider Foundation members in the state of Oregon, as well as the Portland, Syosaw, and Newport chapters, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to comment on House Bill 3633. Wave energy has been big source of interest for our members and our chapters over the last couple of years, and it's been, you know, kind of a challenging issue in some respects because many of our members have said, hey, this is renewable energy, we need to support this full bore, and some of our other members have said, hey, this has the opportunity to significantly affect a lot of existing ocean uses, we need to put the brakes on this. So what we did was came up with a policy statement, which I'd be happy to send along, and basically laid out some key principles that we're interested in this developing technology, but we also have some significant concerns, and we want to make sure that a number of key principles are followed as we move forward with this technology. A couple of them are ensuring public safety, employing adaptive management through this process, and applying the best available science, and proceeding incrementally and cautiously, and giving respect to existing ocean uses that are already currently occurring out there, which are significant contributors to our coastal economies, whether that's commercial and recreational fishing or recreational uses such as surfing, diving, and kayaking. One of the things that I'm interested in this bill is the fact that it comes about this from a comprehensive statewide approach, which I think is really needed, rather than seeing individual applications targeting specific areas. It really looks at, you know, what do we have existing, what are some opportunities that we might have, and what are some constraints that we might have. This past summer, we were able to collaborate with Douglas County, who has proposed a project very similar to this that's mentioned in this bill. We had a graduate intern from Yale University who conducted a recreational use study of that area and answered many questions that were laid out by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. And what she found was that there was a lot of different recreational uses that were occurring within this area, and that this user community really should be brought into the conversation. And so I'd like to kind of highlight that importance. And I'm interested in the possibility of utilizing the existing Territorial Sea Plan Advisory Committee that's already in place rather than creating a new task force, if you will. I think this is a really well-rounded group of individuals. I serve on this committee, as do many others that are in the room here today. And there's really good, diverse representation on it. And I think that that would be a really appropriate place for that to go. And I think one of the key things that I'll end on is the importance of utilizing local knowledge in this process and as this discussion moves forward. So thank you for the opportunity to comment.
Thank you, Mr. Gason. I think we would benefit, or at least I would, from seeing the policy statement that you mentioned.
Absolutely. So I'll send along.
Thanks very much. Mr. Wooden.
Chairman Reed, committee members, thank you for the opportunity to talk. For the record, my name is Paul Wooden. I'm executive director of the Community Renewable Energy Association. We've been active in the state for a number of years with other advocacy groups like our Renewable and Project Northwest, Citizens Utility Board, Association of Counties, and others. We were part of the group that was able to define in the Renewable Energy Standard the 8% set aside for community scale renewables. Our intention was that we realized that with a renewable energy standard that included a percentage for renewables, commercial wind has the potential to expand very rapidly and be a benefit to the state. But we wanted to make sure there was a set aside so that there was a place for the smaller technologies, biomass, wave energy, geothermal, small hydro, small wind. We're pleased that the original bill is morphing into a task force. We think that's an intelligent way to move the concept forward. We would like to offer our services on the task force and our experience in the state with working small-scale renewables. Our overall vision is that we look at the process holistically. There are processes that benefit all of the smaller technologies, and it makes it a lot simpler if we're all trying to move in a similar direction. So as the task force is developed, Community Renewable Energy Association will be pleased to be a member, and we hope we can contribute to it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wooden. Any questions for this group? I don't see any. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Representative Boone, did you want to make any closing comments, or we're happy to stay where we are if that's preferable.
Deborah Boone for the record. No, I really don't, other than that I hope you'll consider what's happening here. And I know you're on a short timeline. We'll work quickly to get any amendments drawn up, and hopefully, I'm not sure what your schedule's like the rest of the week, but.
Well, I'm going to announce, or I'll take the opportunity to announce that we'll carry this bill over for Thursday and hope that we can have amendments for that time. I certainly have great interest in this, and owing in part to the experience with the solar initiative that those who were on the committee last time had some experience with. I think this has a lot of potential to help us identify the way forward and help hydrokinetic energy, a term I learned from Representative Boone, be a big part of Oregon's future.
And now we have to add the word marine to it, to be precise.
Okay.
So there are many names for this, but it's a very exciting time for me. I've been, in the last 3 to 4 years, a member of a couple of different groups that focus on this, and traveled to Ottawa most recently and heard what's happening in the rest of the world, and people literally came up to me and said, "You're from Oregon, we need to talk." So it's happening, and we're being watched, and I think this is the someone mentioned it too, to go a little more slowly and carefully. I didn't expect to get anything done this session per se, other than this bill, which would take the next step, and I think we've landed on the task force model and get something out from there. And I know time's really tight and it's going to move fast, so that was one of the main reasons for choosing an existing task force that has been one of the biggest problems on doing things in our communities, along the coast at least, is finding people who are well-known and trusted, and that piece being done with this group because it's been in place for a while. And a lot of the other thing I wanted to say is there are several other groups, Ocean Policy Advisory Council, which is advisory to all different permutations of government agencies and the governor and the legislature. And so we plan to work very closely with these existing groups to not recreate anything, but to play off each other and utilize and be most efficient in our use of time and material to get to where we want to be. So thank you very much.
Any other questions for Representative Boone? Thank you very much. So the upshot of that is coming soon, more amendments. Thank you very much. With that, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3633. I'll announce just one more time that House Bill 3605, House Bill 3633, and House Bill 3644 will all be carried over to our next meeting on Thursday. Comments for the good of the order? We're adjourned.